Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the What the Fundest podcast. This week, we are going to discuss associations between peripapillary retinal nerve fiber layer and choroidal thickness with the development and progression of diabetic retinopathy. It was published in the February 2022 issue of Investigative Ophthalmology and Visual Science. Major shout out to IOVS because most of their articles are open access, so anyone can access them without paying.
Oh, cool.
Which is really cool. Not all of them, but the vast majority of them, you know.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that I didn't have to log in with some old institutional ID.
Yeah. And another one too, just as a, you know, if you sign up for a JAMA account, the Journal of the AMA, if you sign up for an account, usually they'll have pretty good access to the ophthalmology, JAMA ophthalmology, you know,
as
well.
Oh, that's a good tip.
So that's a good one as well. And some of them are hit and miss. You can sign up for their free thing, but there are a lot more than others. But IOVS and JAMA ophthalmology are two big ones that let you basically read whatever you want.
Oh, that's nice. No, normally I'm like, okay, yeah, what was my ID number? Let's see if I hid this anywhere in my email account.
Yes.
From like 10 years ago.
But if you're nerds like us, you appreciate the ability to read the full article and not the abstracts, you know, basically.
Gatekeeping all this knowledge from us.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I was looking at, and there was one journal, I can't remember which one it was, that I repeatedly kept going to because it had interesting looking articles. And the subscription was like $1,500 a year. I'm like,
no,
I can't. I mean,
who's doing this?
Like, who in private practice is doing this? You're like, obviously, it's only people who, you know, just have their institution pay for it, you know, or whatever, and they just get the institution rate or whatever. But those of us who just want to know, we have to pay. Yep. We'd have to pay tens of thousands of dollars a year. Yeah, you know, unless someone out there would like to sponsor the What the Fund podcast, and then we could
we'll get our own institutional
shuttle that. Idea. We'll just get our own institutional, you know, rate or anything if we can prove that people actually
university
exactly WTFU.
Yep, perfect.
Yeah, so at any rate, what drew my attention to this? I am always fascinated by the use of current technology to try to figure out new ways to use it, you know, basically, because it basically uses, you know, pretty much your normal swept source OCT to try to predict the development. Here's the purpose of the paper: to evaluate the role of the peripapillary retinal nerve fiber layer and peripapillary choroidal thickness in the development and progression of diabetic retinopathy. So as you know, many, 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 many of our patients have diabetes. And so...
America.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, more world people.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
Human species at this point. It's an interesting kind of thing because this was actually done, you know, this study was done in China, you know, so...
pretty good sample size too, 895
almost 900 patients. Yeah. But it's all about, you know, what can we, I have long debated and trying to get some of our doctors to do, you know, to do it, but no one ever really has jumped on board of doing screening OCTs on people.
Right.
You know, just, I mean, because it takes time, I get it. You know, we don't have much time, you know, anyway. And as much as the OCT companies would like to say that, oh, you could take these in 35 seconds or whatever. Mm-hmm. That assumes the patient is going to line up properly.
Yeah. And, has like, you know, a 4 millimeter pupil. Yeah.
And so there's just always more and more evidence that shows that there's a lot of reasons for patients that are over the age of 40 or 50 that you should be doing
a
screening OCT as like a baseline. Cause you know, you could look at this and then, you know, the software will let you measure this peripapillary RNFL and the peripapillary choroidal thickness. It'll let you measure it. And then, you know, you can put that in the chart and then compare it.
Right.
You know, that person's diagnosed with diabetes. You can compare those two and go, wow, I'm going to start seeing this person every 6 months because, you know, because they did find, fairly lower, significant
lower incidence. Average thickness. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was super interesting, this article. And honestly, the whole time I'm reading it, I'm thinking, oh my God, I've probably been like, I guess, incorrectly evaluating my glaucoma patients who also have diabetes. You know, because you're thinking about their RNFL, their peripapillary RNFL levels, and, you know, you're seeing this decrease, and let's say their pressure's fine, and you're like, no, we need your pressure to be even lower. You're clearly progressing. Like, but it's, you know, they're so closely linked together. So I'm like, oh, wow. Like, I probably should put, I don't know, I guess an extra consideration in the patients that have these comorbidities.
I still think you should probably still, you know, in those cases, you should still want their pressure lower.
Yeah, of course.
You know, but I mean, that kind of lends credence to, you know, everything that you read, that diabetes makes everything worse.
Yeah,
story you know, makes your glaucoma worse, you know, all that kind of thing. And it's, you know, as I was going through this, all I kept thinking to myself was parasites. That's like all
parasites,
even though they don't mention parasites in this article. But it's funny because in that parasite article, it basically said, because it kind of gets to a chicken egg thing in this, like it does here, right. You know, in that parasite article, it said that, you know, really in glaucoma, it could be that there's damage to the parasites, like genetic damage to the parasites first, then it causes neurodegeneration. Right. But then they're saying here is it's like, you see the neurodegeneration first and then you see the blood vessel. So it's well, which is it?
Right.
You know, or
like, this be a predictive factor for?
Yeah. And this, I think it kind of more says that there's probably more changes in the choroidal vasculature. Mm-hmm. In early diabetes, in diabetes before you get
those small microvascular changes. Yeah. You know,
so that there's actually much more change in the choroid first.
Right.
Which, man, that choroid, it's implicated in.
What a rascal.
It just kind of proves that I think we just don't know enough about the choroid in general because it's implicated in everything. Like was like we were talking about in the pre-show about how myopes have a much thinner choroid in general. Mm-hmm. And so they think that causes scleral hypoxia, which can increase the amount of, you know, axial length, you know, growth and everything like that. So it's definitely, you know, definitely a choroidal. This paper intimates that it is a big time choroidal issue.
Mm. So it's more than just like Sattler's layer and Haller's layer. Right. Yeah, for sure.
I'm way too far out of school to remember what any of those layers are.
Oh God. So. That's all I got. Just those buzzwords. But I mean, and it makes sense, right? The deeper we've been getting in imaging the retina with like OCTA, you know, swept source OCT, I mean, the greater advancements I think that we're going to get as time goes on. So the other thing I was thinking about with this was that when we would have patients that were going to retina that had edema, you know, I was always sort of looking at their parapapillary RNFL and thinking like, okay, so we really have to be aware that this person's getting injections, you know, like the Avastin is essentially making their glaucoma worse. And, you know, just to be aware, like, okay, do they have fluid? How is this affecting the OCT and the thickness maps that we're seeing? But it's like, okay, great. Let me just add in this additional factor to my decision.
Well, I think probably by that point, this paper is more talking about the people that they didn't accept any patients that have glaucoma.
Had PDR.
Yeah. You know, so
Oh, that's true.
That was one of the things that ruled people out was if they had glaucoma, that they in theory had normal, quote unquote, normal, retinas, and normal nerve function. So that rules that, but this is more used in people who aren't at the point to where they're getting injections for stuff.
Right. No, that's
true. This was mainly used as a you know, how can we use this data to figure out if they're going to get diabetic retinopathy? You know, so like here's the some of the data they present. The average PRNFL, which is peripapillary retinal nerve fiber layer, was significantly thinner in patients with a diabetic retinopathy incidence, measuring 111 microns plus or minus 12 without, and 103. So fairly significant. I mean, p-value of like 0.001. So, you know, almost like slam dunk,
right?
You know, kind of thing. Interestingly, they said the difference was the most significant in nasal, inferior, superior, and superior only, but not temporal.
Right.
You know, so you wonder if some of those patients, if they were myopic, if that temporal area was kind of thinned already, just more physiologically, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, I suppose.
So that's why. But either way, you obviously get enough data that you could do this too. And the peripapillary choroidal thickness, the PCT, was also significantly thinner with another significant p-value. It was 114, and it was 91. So, I mean, really significantly thinner,
right,
like something
right.
that you could easily say, okay, even
you're at higher risk, right?
Two different techs who do two different OCTs, you're going to be able to tell, you know, you're going to be able to tell that difference.
Yeah, I wonder if we could get some hard data out of this as far as the peripapillary RNFL thickness.
Yeah, the thing is that, like, as in looking at, I think the thing is you'd have to look at patient by patient over time.
Right.
Like,
that's
I mean,
true.
Because you look at the, if you look at the, you know, the information that goes into the nomograms mm-hmm. of the glaucoma OCTs, it's like thousands of patients.
Right.
You know, so I don't think we're going to get
like the normative database. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. I don't think we're going to get a software update anytime soon that says, you know, if they have a PRNFL right. of this, then these people are going to have a higher risk of diabetes. It's more the, these people are already diabetic, but have no retinopathy.
Right.
So you do an OCT, an optic nerve OCT, and measure it. And then you measure it again in a year or 6 months and see how it looks.
Right.
You know, kind of thing. So, I mean, that's the way I would approach it. Even though,
yeah,
of course,
I think
trying
that
to
could
get
definitely give like meaningful information, and it, especially in the OCTs that we have in our offices, which is like a lot of them have the Topcon Maestro. You know, the screener yeah. one is so easy to do, and it gives you the, you know, the clock hours, the quadrants.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the difference between with and without diabetic retinopathy, as far as the thickness is, it's huge.
Yeah. I mean, those numbers are enormous. Like if you saw that change in a patient, like you'd be starting glaucoma therapy on them.
Right.
You know?
So, yeah. And it's, know, it would be interesting to see if we could dig through this and find sort of like what percentage change or what micron amount change would be like a statistically significant difference. You know, like, let's say you're looking at an RNFL and from year to year, if you're seeing a 7 micron change, you know, that's statistically significant. So.
Yeah. I mean, and these were done over 2 years.
Right.
So you figure, you know, those changes, which were, gosh, I lost it on the page. You know, so the RNFL was 8 different,
right. You know,
8 microns difference over 2 years. And the choroidal thickness was 23 microns different. Obviously, it's different because, you know, usually we're right. not grading choroidal thickness when it comes to glaucoma. Yeah. You know, so.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's pretty much just 8.
Yeah. So, and again, it's one of those things where I think having baseline data would really help you with a lot of these patients.
Yeah.
You know, so peripapillary choroid has been, a thinner peripapillary choroid has been found to be independently associated with a thinner RNFL. So it means that the choroidal thickness and the RNFL in general in a random healthy person there's going to be no correlation between the two. Right. So the fact that in these patients, when you saw decreases in both of them, you could kind of say, okay, one causes the other, which causes the, causes the diabetic retinopathy, mm-hmm. Basically like they're all linked together.
Right. No, I think it would be totally reasonable for, every diabetic patient to get a screen or OCT.
Yeah. And then probably
we don't do now.
Yeah. Well, one thing, because it's not going to get reimbursed.
Right.
Because you're technically not going to, find anything.
Right.
On these, so like, I don't think you could say that, thinner than average RNFL is, available. As granular as ICD-10 codes are, right. I don't think we're going to find that one.
Yeah. That's going to be a no
on it. So here's one of the conclusions they come to, and I'm just going to read it just to, kind of show you where they kind of coming from, more of the chicken and the egg thing. Is they still have, even after this, they still don't know which one causes what. They just know there's correlation, but they don't know cause. Neurodegeneration shown by the thinning of PRNFL and impaired choroidal circulation shown by the thinning of PCT are independently associated with diabetic retinopathy onset, and assessing both metrics can improve the risk assessment of DR incidences. So, what they're showing is that if they have RNFL thinning alone has a, an incidence of that, but if you also have just choroidal thickness decrease, that's also associated with it as well. Like, you don't have to have nerve fiber layer thinning to have higher incidence choroidal of diabetic retinopathy.
Yep. Right.
So, which is interesting, because you figure if you have, just thinking of this from a pathophysiological diabetes standpoint, if you have choroidal thinning, is that what contributes to the retinal hypoxia you get in diabetic retinopathy? And is that why you get it? I mean, obviously it's not just one thing, if you go back to the parasites, that's why you get bleeding,
right?
But if you get enough choroidal thinning, is that why you get, ultimately we'll get neovascularization and all that kind of thing, because you're just not getting enough blood flow to the eye.
It's just not poor circulation.
Not because you get too much bleeding and that's why you're not getting good circulation. It's just that layer of the eye, which the choroid gives the vast majority of the nutrients to the retina. If you're not getting that there because the choroid is thinning because of the diabetes, is that why you get neovascularization?
All good questions.
Yeah. And should we now then give everyone red light therapy so that bulks up that choroid?
Maybe. Red light is the answer for everything.
That's right.
how do you, I don't know how you image the choroidal thickness. Other than just sort of winging it. I mean, I think standard OCTs don't do a great job of imaging the true depth of the choroid.
I think you'd probably just have to do the peripapillary choroid, because that's probably where you're going to get the best. You're probably going to be able to go deepest because the RPE is so thin there.
Thin or non-existent.
Yeah. So that you could probably gauge it from there.
And I mean, I'm assuming what would you do? Just take out the crosshair and measure it.
Just kind of do
an ANSA OCT, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure they probably have that. But then it would probably be, if you have a B scan, you could just do B scans on everybody to measure choroidal thickness. That's again, we're talking to people who are not going to have that in their offices, because we're talking to primary care optometrists at this podcast.
Right.
So I would guess that you'd probably need to focus your energies on
the peripapillary RNFL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
it's
the only thing you're going to be super accurate with.
Right. Because even if you had one technician do it every single time, I mean, it's highly unlikely.
Yeah, that you're going to get good enough data to do it. But at least it's right around the optic nerve, and the optic nerve ones are way easier to get than the other ones in theory. Yeah. So, but then that's pretty interesting that, you know, it would be interesting to see, you know, that they're focusing all their energies on the peripapillary choroidal thickness, but it would be interesting to then see if they did, if they took another cohort of 900 patients and they did B scan ultrasound
on their, and see what the difference is.
On them and see what the differences are. Like maybe it's just around the optic nerve that this damage takes place. And it's really not overall diabetic retinopathy, but it's a, it's partially that, you know, diabetes just makes glaucoma worse. And ultimately that's a, you know, and then they just happen to develop diabetic retinopathy because they've had diabetes for a long time. That's not necessarily controlled. So, you know,
Interesting article for sure.
And just definitely looking for more reasons to do screening OCTs on people, I think.
I know. I'm all in on that.
I just wish there was, there's no, because I guess, do they have wide field OCTs?
I know that the Maestro does it.
I mean, truly wide field, like a mixture of like an optos and an OCT.
Oh, no.
Just because that would be the holy grail, would be one scan that does everything. Right. Or at least one machine, you know, that you could say, okay, they're going to take this one first and then they're going to focus in on something else and then do that.
Yeah.
You know, so. Well, probably only we can't afford that. $100,000.
It doesn't matter if they have.
Well, first, the machine has to exist. Then, second, we have to be able to afford it. So, but I know a couple of practices that do screening OCTs. You know, people. You know, they charge for it. You know, they charge the patient, you know, $29 or something like that. Just like, you know, we charge optos. You know, charge a patient for optos. But gosh, it'd be so great if we could just, if it was just so easy that you could get away with just not charging someone for it.
I know.
Like that would be like, if it was something that was as easy as doing an auto refraction, like that would be ideal. It'd be one step closer to the Star Trek, you know, tricorder of just, you know, waving over someone and then they tell you exactly what's wrong with you.
Yeah. You definitely missed me with that reference, but that's okay.
I'm not even really a huge Star Trek fan. I just know it's a big thing of like, you know.
I'm like just like, working on Star Wars right now. So like, give me a minute.
It's basically, it's like this little device that they wave over you and then they read it and it tells you everything that's wrong with you.
That would be great. That would be much easier than all the other invasive health screening techniques we have.
I just wish a lot of these machines too were more just ergonomically easy for patients.
Yeah. You know? It's like, if you have a patient with a wheelchair, that's going to be a no.
And it's just like, it's just, you know, we are unfortunately a victim of, you know, physics and optics, which you cannot change. Mm-hmm. But gosh, you think it's just, we've been around for this long. We should have been able to figure out how to get an OCT where someone can move half of a millimeter and then it's not going to affect the readings of it.
It's going to not turn out like a complete grayscale image, like totally.
I mean, you figure they have the eye tracking technology because it's in every LASIK laser.
Right.
You know, if they could do laser that moves and your eye can, you can have nystagmus and they still get good LASIK results out of it. They think they should be able to do it on an OCT.
Nope.
Yeah. So
it's asking for too much. We already had this conversation about it's just the EMR systems, the downfall, like how everything should be a lot better than it is. And it's definitely not. It's just,
see, the thing is,
are just not meeting our expectations
for a company like a company that makes OCTs. Okay. They probably make tons of different kinds of things. And that system, there's a lot that goes on in that system. EMR is one thing.
Right.
And most of them don't do it well at all.
Right. You guys.
Yet to they make
job.
Millions of dollars a year yeah. and are still in business. So.
And can shut down your clinic in a minute.
I mean, could you imagine? Could you imagine if like Volkswagen, you know, where 80% of their cars just drove slowly one day? And they were like,
yeah, is that okay,
fine.
Guys?
Don't worry yeah. about it. We'll work on it. Well, we yeah. can't, and none of the cars at our factory are driving slowly.
Yeah, we can't reproduce this issue. Sorry.
We cannot reproduce this issue. So all our cars are driving perfectly fine. So we don't know what 80% of you are talking about. They're it's like, obviously not a real problem.
Huh. Weird. So strange. I don't know. Like submit a ticket. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Call our support line.
Oh man. Gosh, I wish we could go back to paper sometimes.
Oh, good and it's bad, right? Except that my handwriting is illegible and turns out I'm in good company with that.
Yeah. I don't know anyone whose handwriting is, I think we're all just bad at just, we haven't practiced.
Yeah. Must be.
Yeah.
That's my excuse. I just don't practice enough.
All well, right. Now that we've drifted off course about EMR and the terribleness of it, and all that, check out this article. It is, we pretty much gave you the gist of everything with it. But it's, we'll put the link for it in the notes and all that kind of thing, but yeah, it's good stuff. And again, if you're in a practice that's figured out a way to do screening OCTs and do it really efficiently, then, you know, reach out. I'd be glad to pick your brain and figure this out. So,
yeah, do that and then measure patients.
Start measuring patients' peripapillary RNFL. Adding that and putting that in the, putting that in the notes and, yeah. Check your diabetes and then let us know how that works.
In your spare time.
Yeah. Okay. You all have plenty of time. If you have time to listen to this,
that's true.
You have time to measure PRNFL on your patients. So.
True. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
All right.